Perhaps the Federal Reserve won't start raising interest rates until start date 54973.6, that is to say, the distant future. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We're now just over a week away from the next gathering of the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee. That's the controllers of interest rates in America and to some extent globally. At that meeting, it is possible benchmark interest rates will get moved upward for the first time since 2006, but this is not likely, say most forecasters. As we start the week here, let's get the views of Lindsay Piegza, chief economist at the investment company Stifel Nicolaus. Good morning.
Good morning.
I had a public bet that the Fed was going to raise interest rates last spring. This is a bet taken a year ago. Your outfit over there has never been saying 2015, has it?
No, that's right. We actually maintain our longstanding view that the Fed will remain on the sideline until 2016, specifically June of 2016. So it certainly has gone against the grain of what the market's been anticipating. But given the recent weakness across several sectors of the U.S. economy, and now that the calendar is showing 2016 is rapidly approaching, it appears the Fed may be leaning more towards our camp of erring on the side of additional patience.
Well, part of what you're talking about is that very weak employment report that we had a couple weeks ago.
That's exactly right. This is back-to-back months now of sub-150,000 increase in terms of monthly job creation. Still positive, mind you, but that pulls down the three-month average to 167, the weakest quarterly growth rate in hiring that we've seen since 2012. Now, at this point, if the Fed was, in fact, gearing up to raise rates, we would expect widespread strength in the labor market, not a step in the wrong direction to a slower pace of hiring.
You know, but if you're right and the Federal Open Market Committee starts raising rates next summer, that's right in the heat of the presidential campaign. There'll be political conventions right then that could draw political heat.
It could, but if we look to history, the Fed has actually been comfortable initiating a tightening cycle during an election year when there was both a Republican and Democrat incumbent. Now, what they've never done is actually initiate a tightening cycle when there's not an incumbent running for the presidential bid. So I'm not sure if the Fed is going to be swayed one way or the other by the election itself. I think rather they're going to be focused on the underlying fundamentals and looking for that first rate increase since 2006, I do think it will be the economy and not politics that will make that decision for liftoff.
Lindsay Piegza at Stifel Nicolaus, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Saudi Arabia is reportedly now paying its bills a bit late and drawing down a bit of its overseas investments to raise cash. Bloomberg News says it's because the price of oil is where it is, down 2.4% at the moment to just over $46 a barrel. 16 months ago, it was above $110. Now to another major oil-producing country wrestling with crude at these prices. When voters in Canada go to the polls today for parliamentary elections, many will be thinking about an economy there dipping into recession during the first half of this year. Emma Jacobs reports on what oil and other slumping commodity prices are doing to Canada.
Until earlier this year, Ketan Rakeja worked full-time as a firefighter in Alberta's oil fields.
All the rigging and fracking go on in the country, right? So you're on rural roads, right? Like they're not paved roads and they just get icy.
It was sometimes dangerous work, but it paid very well. Rakeja, like a lot of workers in the western oil fields, comes from Canada's economically weaker Atlantic provinces. Many even commuted across the country. But then the global price of oil began to fall.
Everyone was saying, like, you know, things are getting bad in Alberta.
Bad because oil companies were cutting back. Rakeja was laid off in January and took a job in construction that pays less. 36,000 people lost jobs in the province of Alberta's energy sector this year. Deborah Yedlin, business columnist for the Calgary Herald, says that number could reach 50,000. And this has had a ripple effect there.
Housing sales are down 27% year over year in August. If you go for lunch, there's not as many tables that are in use at the restaurants downtown.
She says everyone is watching closely as Canada's three biggest federal parties argue over who can best revive the Canadian economy. the federal conservative government of the last 10 years, led by Prime Minister Stephen Harper, hasn't accomplished all the energy sector wants, building pipelines or negotiating agreements with Canada's Indigenous groups. But Yedlin says Harper's still seen as pro-business.
That's the devil you know.
Also in the running, the Liberal Party and the New Democratic Party. They support oil production, though they might regulate the industry a little more. Rakeja, the oil field's firefighter, says he'll probably leave Alberta soon. But others who've been laid off will stick around.
All they're doing is just waiting by the phone, hoping that the rig calls so that they can go back.
But given the global decline in the price of oil, there may not be much any party can do to make that happen faster. From Montreal, I'm Emma Jacobs for Marketplace.
And this morning, a cybersecurity firm called CrowdStrike is publishing evidence that hackers linked to the Chinese government were trying to get into computers at U.S. technology and pharmaceutical firms, even as the U.S. and Chinese governments were agreeing to bury the hatchet on this stuff. The intrusions, apparently blocked successfully by the companies, happened the day before President Obama and Chinese President Xi announced an agreement not to let their cyber spies do this kind of hacking. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.